The following program is sponsored by the Bar Doctors. The opinions stated do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Bar Biz with Bill and Liz Marin. Sponsored by Bar Doctors. This is our official first show. Real excited about it. We've got a fantastic guest. Been waiting a long time to get this guy on the air. Two of my lifelines in my life sitting in the same room. This is a great show, Bill, and can't wait to get to it.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome, people of Pennsylvania, to the Bar Biz. I'm Bill Marin. My partner, wife and co-host Liz is recovering from COVID, unfortunately.
Recovering is the important word there.
Yeah, she tested negative, but still a little...
Under the weather?
Under the weather. So I'm pleased to announce that we have a very special guest here today, Ed McHugh. Ed is not only a friend, but colleague of mine, a fellow liquor lawyer. We collaborate all the time on liquor licensed issues. We share clients. We refer clients back and forth to each other. Sometimes I say we should have the same office because we talk to each other almost every day. And he's a good friend, and I'm glad to have him here. Ed, say hi.
Thank you for that introduction, Bill. Yes, hi to everybody, and it's great to be here. I've known this guy I'm sitting across from.
He's talking about me.
For decades.
I still remember the first time I met you at Finnegan's Wake when you were thinking about going
private.
Yeah, yeah. So
that was in 2003. Yeah, yeah. 2002, I think, somewhere around there. That's when the Finnegan's Wake was truly the old Finnegan's Wake.
Oh,
hangout,
yeah, man.
That was the place to go.
That was the place to go.
Absolutely.
But Bill, thanks for the introduction. It's great to be here, and as always, we worked together on, I mean, probably talk to you two or three times a day at least, you know, on whatever matters. We may have you on one side, I'm on the other.
Yep. And we refer each other clients at certain expertise that I have and certain expertise that Ed has. So we share clients all the time. Yeah. But anyway, as you know, the show is about the bar and restaurant business. We talk about what's happening in the business and the hospitality industry today. Talk about new laws and rules, regulations, legislative updates, trends in the industry, and all the issues that affect all of us in the bar biz. Ed, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, certainly. So my background includes, I was a state attorney for a period of time. That's where I got my experience in the liquor industry initially. They used to prosecute, you know. People like me,
I'm sure you got me at least once. You did get me.
I mean, the thing is, he never got prosecuted. Really, that's the truth of it. He never got prosecuted.
There is club license law on the books just because I put it there.
But nonetheless, I was there for a period of time. I went into private practice with Goldstein, Freeburg Goldstein. In 2002, I was in private practice for myself for a year or so or a couple of years, and then I went with Goldstein, Freeburg Goldstein. In 2010, we started Goldstein and McHugh, and we've been there. That's been in existence, and I've been practicing in that firm ever since. And we do much of what you do, Bill. You may focus in on like litigation matters a little bit more than I do. I'm focused in on probably more of the fence litigation as it pertains to liquor licensees and, you know, all kind of different liquor licensees. That's kind of where my experience is. And we both do transactional work. We both represent restaurant owners, you know, banks, landlords, lenders, you know, all having to do with restaurant or all having to do with liquor licenses. So, you know, that's the majority of my practice. It's about 80% of my practice and what I do. So,
and you also have an expertise in something that I don't do, which is, you know, the wineries, the manufacturing end of it.
Sure. Certainly our firm does that. And that's, you know, that's because obviously, you know, that's become more popular. It's a way in which you know, an entrepreneur or somebody who wants to pursue a liquor license can, you know, can get into the industry without having to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars to acquire a liquor license. And there's, you know, there's options there, although sometimes it's, it gets, you know, the requirements get cumbersome and you know, but nonetheless, it's a trendy, you know, process.
Yeah. And these breweries, microbreweries, limited distillers, limited wineries, things like that. I always send all that over to you, Ed, because it's not only the Liquor Control Board that's, it's also the ATF, correct, that's involved?
Yes. So that's a more, that's an involved application, much more involved than a typical, you know, retail application would be, where you would just simply apply to the Liquor Board and go through that process. The manufacturing application includes a federal application that you would prosecute along with the state application. So and it can get detailed, you know, the federal application can. There's you know, labeling requirements. There's a whole commodity aspect to that application that has to be complied with. So yeah, it's much more involved.
That's why you do what you do.
Yeah.
Just to shift gears a little bit, one of the most pressing issues right now, especially in Philadelphia, is license renewals. We talked in depth at the last show, Joe, if you recall, about what a license renewal is and issues we've had with Pennsylvania revenue tax clearances. You know, the deadline's coming up in Philadelphia, October 31st, and we said, if you're not renewed by October 31st, you're going to have to close. Ed, do you have any clients right now that are still not renewed? And if so, why?
And can you name them? I'm joking. Yeah. We're just kidding.
It's, obviously, it's not an unusual circumstance.
Yeah.
You know, you have some clients are very sensitive to that deadline. Some clients are not so sensitive to that deadline.
Right.
And then, you know, they go up right against the expiration date. And, you know, they scramble either to get tax clearance or do whatever they have to do in order to, you know, finalize that either renewal application or validation application. But, you know, the requirement is that 60 days in advance of the expiration, which is in Philadelphia, the expiration is October 31st
right.
of each year. Either you have to renew or validate if you're a restaurant licensee. So by September 2nd, you have to have your application into the Liquor Board for processing. If you miss that deadline, you can file after that September 2nd deadline and pay a $100 late fee. If you obviously if it's after October 31st, like you mentioned, Bill, you have to cease selling alcoholic beverages. You know, if you're
right.
a retail licensee. So, I mean, I have clients that, you know, for whatever reason, a lot of it has to do with tax clearance, because the requirement in the liquor code is that each licensee has to have Pennsylvania Department of Revenue clearance and Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry clearance. And if you don't have that, the Liquor Board will not process your renewal or validation.
Which is why you shouldn't wait real long, and because you need to have time to obviously, you know, remedy any of that stuff that, you know, if you're not, am I right?
Yeah,
on that?
Absolutely. I mean, we talked the last show about having a good accountant that knows how to do this. And also we talked about the fact that recently the Department of Revenue has required clearance not only from the liquor license entity, but also from the individual shareholders, which has become a problem.
It really has become a problem. It's prolonged the process for licensees to actually obtain tax clearance, you know, and it's a significant period of time, you know, so... Yeah,
and they go back a number of years. So if you personally have a state tax issue from, you know, 2014 or 2015, mm-hmm. you know, they could go back and say, well, you know, you need to clean this up. And if you don't get it cleaned up, that holds up the entire renewal process for the liquor license entity, right?
Exactly. And you know, Bill, that, you know, even for a tax clearance issue, when it comes to renewing the license, if the board will issue an objection letter,
right,
and we'll hold a hearing if the tax issue goes on for a prolonged period of time,
right.
and you know that, I mean, you know, if the licensee gets tax clearance prior to the hearing date, you know, typically, you know, the hearing goes away, and and the liquor board will approve
it. It's that little box that says, what's it say? Clearance, you got to check?
Clear for revenue, clear for labor and industry. If both boxes are clear and clear, then you just file the fee, pay the fee and file it and you get it.
I imagine, though, if you have those type of tax issues with the state, that's only going to happen once because you're going to have to clear that up the next year, obviously.
Yes.
You know, so
yeah, this goes year to year forever until one of us challenges it in court, because I personally don't think that the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue has the legislative authority to do that, but that's for another day. So, you know, I've said this before, I'll say it again. Liquor licensees tend to renew their driver's license before they will renew their liquor license, even though that's their livelihood. So enough said about that.
Well, just to touch on that, though, Bill, this year, you know, with every even year, it's a renewal year. So what the liquor board does, and I'm sure you have some clients who have gotten objection letters, because, you know, the liquor board, you know, goes through a review process of the operating history of the licensee. So many of our clients right now, if you have a bad operating history, you may have had some citations that you've accumulated over the past 2 years, you could get an objection letter. You know, this is another reason why some of the licensees haven't been renewed, is because they're getting objection letters. This is separate and aside from any kind of tax clearance issue they may have.
Right. So they review the operating history over the past year or 2 years.
Yep.
And if you have a certain number of citations, if you have police incidents, disturbances, assaults, nuisance bar issues, for example, or if you, let's say one of the officers or manager has a criminal record that came up during that period of time, these would all be reasons to object to the renewal.
So for the listeners, and by the way, you're listening to The Bar Biz with Bill Marin and Liz Marin, sponsored by Bar Doctors. Bill's guest is Ed McHugh of Goldstein and McHugh. I will tell you one thing, and in that business, and I spent a long time, my attorneys were my lifelines. Ed, I know Ed better than I know most of the guys I went to high school with. And I know them 40 years, but I spent a lot of time, you know, literally trying to stay open. So when you talk about this, let's think about what you just said. Tax clearance, you talk about nuisance issues, okay, across the board. If you're a liquor license, if you want to be a liquor licensee, or, you know, if you are, there's a lot of compliance here, man. Like you're getting, yeah, you have to, you know, you have tax issues, you have the liquor control board, you have to make sure you're operating in a compliant manner. And then, of course, you know, you're talking about community, law enforcement, you know, all those things. So there's a lot to cover here. And your attorneys and educating, I found like educating me on my license was such a big deal when I leaned on my attorneys to do it.
Yeah, it's a highly regulated industry for sure. And you know, there's all these aspects to it. It's not just, you know, your taxes and filing the renewals and keeping up with those permits, the various permits that you have to get and maintain every year. You know, for example, your health license with the city.
Let's look at L&I, right? I mean,
I mean, so you could have an L&I issue at the local level, for example, that could interfere with all this too. So it's highly regulated, and that's why, you know, Ed and I do what we do.
100%. That's. I agree with you. There's a lot to consider, and a lot to navigate, and you know, resolve. You know, over and just annually, you know, to maintain your liquor license in good standing.
Not to mention, if you have a citation, you're going to court for somebody. So there's a lot going on there. I spent my whole life in the middle of it, and I couldn't have more respect than I do for these guys.
Yeah, just parenthetically too, you know, about citations. You know, so a lot of times you'll get a citation and they'll say, okay, we recommend a $400 fine or whatever. It's a minor violation. The major, what they call enhanced penalty violations are serving minors, serving visibly intoxicated patrons, serving after hours, things like that. Serious violations.
Oh, yeah.
But even if you have minor ones, like
they build up, you gotta
not renewing your health license or not putting your liquor license in a frame and it's posted properly, or, you know, those things add up. You know, so if you get a number of those, even if they're minor, that could be grounds for them to object to your renewal, right, Ed?
So, Bill, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, you'll get it, you know, a licensee might get a citation. It might be like a two-count citation, maybe one for not having a valid health license, maybe the second one for not being a bona fide restaurant for whatever reason. They don't have a proper seating, or maybe they didn't have food that day or something like that. And you may not think it's a big deal. And you may get a favorable recommendation from counsel, and you consider waiving it for a monetary fine.
But it ain't going to happen a lot. Like, you know,
but I'm telling you, if you get repeat violations for that same one, especially not being a bona fide restaurant, the liquor board is so sensitive now to those violations. They're not enhanced, but you know, that's something that could absolutely result in a non-renewal hearing, and a serious non-renewal hearing, where that could really put your license in jeopardy and put you on the radar where the liquor board, not just liquor enforcement, but the personnel from the liquor board will come out to your location. And if you're not in compliance, you know, the statute that passed a number of years ago,
right,
that authorizes the board personnel to come out and shut you down immediately.
Yeah.
And it's, Bill, it's many times have we experienced that where, you know, we're offended as attorneys that, you know, the liquor board has the ability to and authority to do something like that without having due process. You know, those are the issues that we look at. But nonetheless, it's something that's absolutely been done and should be considered serious if and when a licensee gets a citation to that effect.
Yeah, in and amongst the many pet peeves that I have talked about during the show is the enforcement of the liquor laws has long time ago been turned over to the Pennsylvania State Police. It used to be that the liquor board controlled everything, the licensing and the enforcement element. They turned over the enforcement element of the liquor code to the Pennsylvania State Police.
1988.
And created what they call the Bureau of Liquor Control Enforcement, or the BLCE. And they're the enforcement arm. They're the police. So they're the ones that go out and do investigations, and they determine whether you're in compliance with the liquor code and the rules and regulations of the liquor board. And if you're found to have violated, you get a citation, and then, you know, Ed or I get involved, and we enter our appearance, and we can either fight the citation in court or we can resolve it amicably, like we talked about. But recently they have made this rule change that they said that the liquor board, which is the licensing element, those personnel can actually go out to a location, and if they see that you don't have sufficient food or seating, can close you down.
Who, by the way, I mean, aren't they, you know, reputable professionals? Like, in other words, like sometimes like politicians and you know,
well, they're reputable people, and they're very good at what they do. But first of all, their job is to investigate liquor license applications and do licensing. That's their job. That's what they're trained to do. And now they're being told that not only do you have to do that, but for no additional compensation, you're going to go out and you're going to start policing bars.
I mean,
which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, who composes the liquor. I don't.
So the origins of this is probably where you're going, Joe. The origins of this, it kind of came from Philadelphia, and it was really
like the stop and go.
A number of years ago, there was a huge concern, and I guess there still is a huge concern in Philadelphia for the stop and go locations that have a liquor license, either a restaurant liquor license or an eating place liquor license, that really do not operate as any kind of sit down establishment. Okay, you walk in. It's more of like a convenience store. They have plexiglass up, usually in more of the not so great neighborhoods. You know, so the city officials had a difficult time regulating these establishments because they believe that they are like an attractive nuisance. They're bringing these kind of quality of life issues to the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that, but that was the sentiment with these city officials.
Right.
They were having because most of them are in compliance. They have a health permit. They have all the required city permits. They maintain their liquor license. So no criminal activities taking place on the premises. You know, whatever's taking place is taking place in and around that location.
It draws the wrong
so it's element. Hard for these city officials to go. So what they're doing is they're drawing in the liquor board and liquor enforcement, and they passed this law, which Is it actually a law, or is it just a regulation, or is it a procedure? I think it's a statutory provision.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So it permits these enforcement and liquor board personnel to go in and.
What are they doing? Are they selling takeout or something? Or?
Well, if I could jump in, they have the liquor license to sell takeout.
Yeah, they have an E license, which is an eating place retail dispenser or beer only license. Takeout beer joint is really what we call them. They got this moniker Stop and Go Deli,
right?
Which, like Ed said, you know, they're really not serving any food. Like an eating place is supposed to be an eating place, right? So you're supposed to be like a deli where there's seating for 30 people, food to feed 30 people, and they also happen to sell takeout beer. But what they become is basically just, you know, cold cases,
right,
for beer and being sold behind plexiglass. And you know, one of the problems was they were selling these fortified beers, the 40-ounce fortified beers, which, okay, you know, they created a problem in certain communities. So go ahead. I just want
that's the context. And so the liquor board has kind of been drawn into this, along with liquor enforcement, to go ahead and kind of, not kind of, they're regulating these establishments through that process, through enforcing this law. But as a result, this law doesn't just apply to licensees in Philadelphia. Obviously, it applies statewide. So you may have an establishment out in, you know, Coatesville, or have an establishment out anywhere within the state, you know, that may have proper seating, but may not serve food all the time, and may get caught into this net where, and I just had one where it's based on a complaint. And then you have board personnel, supervisors going in and they'll just go to the counter and make a request for food. If they're denied food, that's grounds for them to take action, and they'll issue that cease order. And then that cease order remains in place until, you know, there's some relief. Basically, they'll be closed for a number of days, and then they can request a reinvestigation or some sort of reinspection of that establishment.
Yeah. Amazing. So I just want to add here, because a lot of people don't know that there's no such thing as a bar license, right? Your issue, a retail license is a restaurant liquor license or an eating place retail dispenser license. A restaurant license gives you the ability to sell beer, wine, and liquor for eat-in and beer for takeout.
What is an eatery?
An eatery is, like I said, it's a takeout beer license where you're basically an eating place like a deli, but you still are required to have the required seating and food, and you just sell takeout beer.
Okay.
You know, beer for on-premises, you know, consumption as well as takeout. So the difference between an R and an E is an R has wine and liquor, whereas an E only has beer.
Okay, that's all I wanted.
There's a smaller seating square footage requirement. You only need 300 square feet of serving for an E, whereas you need 400 square feet of serving for an R. But both require that you're an eating place, which means for a restaurant licensee, you're primarily a restaurant. You just so happen to serve liquor, right?
Right.
So you have to serve food at all times that you're serving liquor. You can't say, oh, the kitchen's closed. Right. So
I had Slim Jims on the menu.
You have to have
a just kidding.
And you that's
have
a good
to have,
point.
You
that's
have to
a
have
point.
A meal. Like the old days, you could have chips, pretzels and chips, right?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Slim Jims or whatever. But they've tightened up this requirement that you have to have food for 30 people. You have to have seating for 30 people.
By the way, we had a full massive kitchen, and you pre-ordered your food, massive packages. I would have people, literally, we'd have menus and takeout, so birthday parties and stuff like that, by the hundreds.
Right.
Okay. It became a big part of what we did because, you know, the regulations that you're talking about, it's a real drag if you're running some kind of a bullcrap type situation. You are going to get caught, man. It's going to wear you down. It's going to happen.
And they've been cracking down. Like Ed said, I mean, it's not only the Bureau of Liquor Control Enforcement, it's now the PLCB personnel that can enforce these laws. So, you know, even if you're a shot and beer joint, you still have to be serving a meal. And that could be like frozen pizza. That can be, you know, hot dogs and hamburgers, but it has to be a meal, right?
Yeah,
100%. I mean, you summed it up you know, exactly.
I've gotten away with 30 cans of Dinty Moore beef stew.
That's not really available anymore. Like,
that's aging myself.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, this is such a fun conversation. I got to tell you, my mind is going 1,000 miles a day. Like every example,
bringing back some bad memories.
Oh yeah, but actually, though, Ed, you know, I you know, you and I've been on the phone with you while we were operating, and even after we were operating, like literally, I mean, you know, more than most of my staff. Okay, because you know, you have to be educated on. The rules and regulations, or you are going to have a problem. And by the way, I just want to say one thing before we get the break. We talked about this the last time, Bill, about the expertise in, you know, with our liquor license attorneys. I'll say this, there's only a handful of you. And by the way, the best of them are in this room right here. That's a fact. There's no question. Ed, listen.
That's nice.
You don't have to pay that bill now.
Okay, I'm going to need that check afterwards. what was interesting about my situation is I needed to make a living. I wasn't a rich guy, okay? And not that there's anything wrong with being a rich guy, but a lot of times when people have a lot of money, they may just pawn off the management to somebody else. They find out fairly quickly that if that guy is in there for the women and the party, they're going to be a massive problem, and not because you actually need to make a living. And so when you need to stay open or you're going to be ironworking on Monday, you learn to lean on your liquor attorneys and your zoning attorneys to make sure, but also you guys are dealing with real estate issues, you're dealing with contract issues, you're dealing with litigation, you're dealing with the city. It goes on forever. That's why you only have a handful of liquor attorneys in the city of Philadelphia. And I always stop by when I'm walking down the street, I'll see the placard on the door to see which one of you guys is going to be, because there's only a handful. And I'm looking at them.
We do the same thing.
Yeah, we do the same thing.
I know you do.
I'll purposely pull over just to look at the poster.
Let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Bar Biz on WWDB Talk 860. We'll be back in just a minute.
Are you looking to sell your bar, restaurant, or other liquor-licensed establishment in Pennsylvania? Are you looking to buy one? Are you looking to buy or sell a liquor license? Bar Doctors can help. Bar Doctors is a bar brokerage and consulting firm with over 30 years of experience. Their Bar Doctors are highly trained in all aspects of the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board laws, rules, and regulations. They have liquor lawyers, accountants, insurance agents, vendors, consultants, and other hospitality specialists on staff to assist you in a smooth and successful transition. Whether you're looking to buy or sell, Bar Doctors has your cure. Contact them now at bardoctors.net or call them at 567-BAR-DOCS. That's bardoctors.net or 567-BAR-DOCS. Are you looking to sell your bar, restaurant, or other liquor-licensed establishment in Pennsylvania? Are you looking to buy one? Are you looking to buy or sell a liquor license? Bar Doctors can help. Bar Doctors is a bar brokerage and consulting firm with over 30 years of experience. Their Bar Doctors are highly trained in all aspects of the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board laws, rules, and regulations. They have liquor lawyers, accountants, insurance agents, vendors, consultants, and other hospitality specialists on staff to assist you in a smooth and successful transition. Whether you're looking to buy or sell, Bar Doctors has your cure. Contact them now at bardoctors.net or call them at 567-BAR-DOCS. That's bardoctors.net or 567-BAR-DOCS.
Hello there, this is Nat King Cole wishing you all a happy and a Merry Christmas.
The joy of living is in the giving. So let's give lots of toys for tots. Toys, toys, toys for tots. Some have too many, some haven't any. If those who have, give those who haven't,
Oh, what a Christmas day. The Marine Reserve will help you, will help you fill your sleigh with lots and lots of toys for tots. So give a little toy today.
Since 1947, the United States Marine Corps has been helping Santa fill his sleigh, making happier holidays for deserving children right in your community. Go to toysfortots.org and learn how you can make a difference.
Charlie died after taking a single pill that turned out to be counterfeit.
He was having back issues, and it was a counterfeit poisonous pill.
Websites and social media selling fake medicines may look legitimate, but they're not. Drugs from these rogue pharmacies could have fillers like sawdust or deadly fentanyl.
He died in less than 15 minutes after taking the pill.
Now there's a free tool that can give you peace of mind. At safe.pharmacy, enter the pharmacy web address and you'll know if the site you're using is safe.
If you're not getting your prescriptions from a legitimate source, that next dose you take could be your last.
We just don't want other people to go through what we're going through. It's just horrific.
Go to safe.pharmacy. Find out about fake medicine on social media and if the site you're buying from is safe.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley, welcome back to the Bar Biz on WWDB Talk 860. Bill Maron is our host. Liz Maron is also our co-host. She's on sabbatical, recovering from COVID. She's tested clear. She's queer, so we're all good.
Yeah,
right?
We both tested negative. It was funny. We were at a party last Saturday, and that's where I think where we picked it up. So people beware. It's still around.
It is, but here's the thing. Same at my brother's house. He had a birthday party, a lot of kids, but thankfully everybody's good. And a shout out to Liz. We miss you. I want to say one thing about Ed McHugh, and as it comes to, you know, I know we're going to get into club licenses, which Ed was at a total loss before I taught him everything he knows about clubs. He was in a panic. I remember that particular 15-minute tutorial I gave you.
I think Barry may have brought me on board just as a hired gun for Joe's establishment.
I'll just
to represent Joe.
I remember. We all went to bat because when Ed was out there, I remember talking to Barry because I had just met him, and we're all, and I think a certain city councilman also, and we were like, you gotta bring Ed McHugh on, man. I mean, he said, and here we are.
Liquor licensing is a niche practice, and club licenses is a sub niche, which I always give all my club stuff to Ed McHugh.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Everything I've learned.
And he doesn't want to do it either.
It's so difficult.
I know, let me tell you something. Certainly the entry rules, I mean, ours was so complicated. I remember our good buddy V said to me, I'll never forget when you testified, Ed. You remember we were sitting there. I testified to Joe. They still have my testimony on for entrance procedures. It didn't work, but I mean, it's still, they said, no, that was very impressive.
I think we fed Brian to the wolves.
I think he hasn't been seen since. That's my brother he's talking about.
Okay. Probably. Well, we're going to be talking a little bit about club licenses in a minute, but I want to talk about impactful legislative change recently is the RTD cocktails, ready-to-drink cocktails, or the RTDCs, as the board's calling them, which went into effect in September 16th, I believe, the act signed by Governor Shapiro. It was a bipartisan legislation, which we all applaud, which allows bars, restaurants, our licenses, hotels, and distributors, beer distributors, to sell prepackaged, ready-to-drink cocktails for not only on-premises consumption, but for takeout. Ed, we kind of went into this new law in the last show in detail, but I wanted to ask you, what do you think about this new law and how does it affect your clients? Do you think it's good for your clients?
Yeah. So, Bill, I think the law is well overdue. You know, this is a law that permits retail licensees to sell for on-premises consumption, and more importantly, really off-premises consumption.
Right.
You know, so it's for sale off-premises consumption.
Takeout.
Any vodka-based drink, any drink that has, you know, that's liquor-based that they weren't able to provide before.
Whiskey too, Jack and Coke.
Yeah, so you know, your White Claws, your Surfsides, like all of those that are vodka-based, you know, prior to this law, you have to go into the state store.
It didn't
make any sense, you know, where you have these packaged goods that really should be make available for distributors, for retail licensees to have available for their patrons. This law permits that to happen, and I think the industry is embracing it. You have many licensees, many of my clients have already applied for the permit and received the permit. It's a little steep, the permit.
$2,500 initially, right?
$2,500 initially. Then thereafter, there's a certain percentage of sales that you know each renewal period that you're going to have to pay over to the liquor board. They're never out of the equation.
Yeah, it's 2% of your gross sales of that product in the preceding year.
Right. So they always get their share, but overall, it's a really good change, and I think it's overdue, but I'm glad to see it's here, and I think the industry's taken advantage of it.
Have a lot of your clients applied for it already?
Yes, they have.
Okay. Yeah. And I noticed something peculiar. The restaurants and hotels, beer distributors are permitted to get this permit, but not e-licenses, correct?
Yeah, I mean, because e-licensees really cannot serve liquor anyway.
Okay.
So, you know what I mean? So, you have a situation where, they're limited to malt and brew beverages, which would leave them out of
there. Got it. So, all right, that's the rationale. That makes sense. Okay. All right, so let's jump to club licenses. And what is the difference? You know, there's a number of retail licenses that we've been talking about, R's and E's. And the C's. There's a club license and a catering club license. What makes a club license different than a...
All right, I got this.
Joe, fill us in. You could run with it.
Everything you need to know.
All right, so I learned this from Ed McHugh, okay? So let's get that straight. So there's no copyright infringement here. But a C license is a club license where only members are allowed in. Club catering license is a license where a member can throw a party and non-members can come in. So as a member of my club, okay, and everybody's got to be on a list, you know, so you can't just open up your doors at 12 o'clock and say, well, everybody, you know, everybody's invited to the party. You have to be on a list. And that's true because the Liquor Control Board is not on that list, even though I've invited every one of them. But the bottom line is, so that's, am I in a ballpark there, right?
So, yeah, absolutely, Joe. So the basic difference between, they're both retail licenses, Bill, but you have your R licenses, you have your E licenses, you have your H licenses, and variations of those licenses as well that run their establishments for profit. You know, everything that goes into their establishment really has to do with
making money
and, you know, developing a revenue stream, et cetera. Club licenses are different. Club licenses have a completely different definition in the liquor code. They have to be a nonprofit. They have to be run for the benefit of the membership. They have to have a purpose. They have to have a charter. That charter has to be kept in succession.
Like a Knights of Columbus something like that.
Exactly. So like American Legion, Knights of Columbus, whatever it may be. And, you know, they have to have bylaws, a constitution. They have to elect their officers. They have to do business through their regularly elected officers. They have to admit members through written application, investigation, balloting. They have to charge dues to their members. And all of this information, all of this has to be documented and documented to the letter when it comes to the liquor board, not only to be licensed, but also to maintain your license over the years of existence. So it's a very strict requirement. The advantage they have is they're permitted to stay open until 3 a.m. They're permitted to have their patients on the premises until 3:30 a.m. It's a huge advantage.
Right, so if people say
after hours.
People say, hey, I want an after hours license, and they think that there's such a thing. It's really not an after hours license per se. It's a club license, but you're given an extra hour of service time, right?
Yes.
And our club license was in our neighborhood. Okay, so the advantage that I have, why I love this business and I love what you guys do. When I got in this business, we transferred our license from East Falls, which was there since 1900. And like 20 or something like that, downtown. And so I was responsible with Barry Goldstein, with Gary Freeberg, with Ed McHugh, okay? I'll throw Matt in there too. I know he was in the vicinity. but the point is, once you learn and all those things, you want to operate properly, okay? And so like Ed said, it's no joke. That's why we were able to survive so long.
So, yeah, I mean, Ed, you were talking about these requirements being very strict. So obviously, a club license is members only, and I guess they can bring a guest if they're a member.
Yeah, so I'll just touch on what Joe mentioned. You know, Joe did say, so the typical C license has to be a members only license, meaning that you have to gain membership to that establishment in order for you to buy an alcoholic beverage at the premises. You could bring a guest onto the premises if you wish. They cannot purchase alcohol. So if you want to buy that guest an alcoholic beverage, if you're a C licensee, you can do that. Joe indicated that there's also another club license that's available. It's called a catering club license, where if you have a catering club license, you have to have a health permit. You have the capacity to serve food. And you could hold catered affairs at your location, meaning that you can bring non-members onto the premises to purchase alcohol if it's truly a catered affair as it's defined in the liquor code, meaning there has to be food, has to be prearranged.
At least 24 hours in advance?
I think it's...
But it's not something you could just do every night. This is Joe's birthday party. This is Fred's birthday party. This is Sam's birthday party. Yeah. So it's...
Tongue in cheek. You can't do it every night.
Well, right, so staff.
It's supposed to be a catered event, like a birthday party or a bar mitzvah.
Let me ask Ed this question. This is interesting because we had... our license was a C license, and you... And I can you still do it, apply for the catering element? Okay, because we didn't, our license wasn't a catering club before you applied for that.
Yes.
Privilege.
So you have to have a C license prior to be able to get a catering club license.
So you can convert a C into a CC?
Correct.
And vice versa?
Yes.
Okay.
Vice versa. If you want to kind of if you want to downgrade to a C, but for a C, you don't have to have a health license, which is, that's a pretty significant difference. If you don't have to have a health for a CC, you have to have a health license because you got to have the capacity to serve food.
So right. If you're just a C, a club license, you don't have to serve food.
No.
Okay. I didn't.
That's interesting.
It's been so long. That,
well, it's,
but that's it, a no, members
the,
only.
I
club.
Think the idea there were, correct me if I'm wrong, Ed, was like if you have a VFW lodge, and a bunch of guys sitting around drinking beer, and they're only members. And it's
75 cents a beer. They don't have any draft beer, really. It's just kind of bottled,
Oh, yeah.
They want to make that available to, especially if it's like an American Legion or it's like, Veterans of Foreign War or something. They want to maintain that license. They want to make that available.
So there has been some concern from the liquor board, as you know, Ed, as far as people have abused the club license privilege. So you have the American Bocce Ball Association, a charter from 1932, and now it's Club So-and-So, Club Elite, where it's a dance club, and somebody walks in the door and they fill in an application, pay $20, and all of a sudden they become a member and they go in the door. That's not legal, is it?
It's not legal.
And yes, it is. No, I'm just kidding.
We're so, technically legal. We're splitting hairs.
And Bill, it's pretty commonplace. There are entities or there are people who want to try to acquire that club license because they want to be able to serve
that extra hour.
That extra hour and have people in their place until 3:30. And I think most of those establishments would be, you know, in the city or close to the cities where that nightlife is that nightlife kind of industry is alive and well.
You'd have to change the mission, obviously, if you're going to do something like that and still and cover the bases. So you could have, for example, a dance club where the purpose of it is not what it was. Ours was the Falls Beneficial Association. And so obviously it was a benefit. It was in our neighborhood. It's on my street. I live on Crescent Street. It was the liquor license. My uncle was the president before we took it down downtown. We changed the purpose when we got down there, but we did everything legally. If you're going to spend that much money and upgrade a facility and all that, you want to run as to your point, Bill. You want to run as, you know, to the T as you possibly can, or you will lose it, man.
Yeah.
I mean, this
well,
is...
Well, yeah, just, I mean, and that's not the point I was trying to make, and Ed, I want you to respond to this, is that the board has been cracking down on these so-called clubs to see if they're actually are abiding by their charter.
Oh, yeah.
If they're doing the... application, investigation, and balloting, which is required to become a member, that they're maintaining their minutes. You're supposed to have meetings every month, and people have to go to these meetings, and actually, it has to be a bona fide club, right?
So yes, Bill. I mean, there is actually an audit division that they have at enforcement that really it focuses in on these club audits where they will go to a club licensee, leave a request for records, come back the following week and do a complete audit, which I know Joe's has experienced that. It's a very difficult situation because you have to go through, you know, that audit and enforcement has to be satisfied that you're operating as a bona fide club and you're satisfied all those requirements. You're meeting, you know, all your own, you're abiding by your own bylaws, your own constitution. You're fulfilling your purpose. You know, the membership requirements are all in place. Financially, all the documents have to be in place. You know,
your dues.
That's very important. Your bank statements, your treasury reports, all of those things have to be in place in order for you to maintain your license, in order for you to satisfy that investigation. That's just one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is the licensing aspect. Like if you're at a certain location, you want to change locations. If you're, you know, at a location maintaining your club license and you want to change your composition in a sense, that's going to draw the attention of the liquor board and they're going to do a full analysis.
They're going to go all the way back to all
and
your records.
Bill, yeah. I know you've been involved in some of it too.
I've been there. It's
a very difficult task.
I actually applied for a club license to put in a location I won't mention, but I went through that ringer and, you know, it's very difficult and they're very strict about it. And I want to say something else is a lot of people don't understand that the Bureau of Liquor Control Enforcement, which is an adjunct of the Pennsylvania State Police, these individuals are highly trained and they go in undercover and they're allowed to buy liquor. Okay. And a lot of people don't know that.
I'm shocked.
So they can go in and they can say, hey, I want to become a member of this club here. And
they weren't invited to the party. So they know you're automatically getting a citation if they get served.
Right. So if he gets in and he's not a member and he's gets served, right, you're going to get a citation. And you get a number of these citations, you're going to lose your liquor license.
Completely. And well, I agree with that.
Yeah, and you're talking about you got to be in good standing with the community, with the police. I mean, you're in the middle. If you're going to run roughshod, as we all know, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb. You're not going to last long.
Right. And a lot of these clubs, the investigation is precipitated by the fact that there's a neighborhood complaint.
Oh, my God.
Or, you know, a minor... You know, a 20-year-old comes home to her parents and she's drunk and they say, where was she? Oh, I was at the so-and-so nightclub, you know, and that starts an investigation. So, you know, if you're running things tight and you're doing the right things, you're fine. If you're not, you know, like you said, you're going
to
get going.
Well, keep in mind, of all the things that, you know, we were able to accomplish, that license was in my family, in my neighborhood, my family. So in other words, this was, you know, like we were, you know, it meant a lot to me. So I worked really hard.
Well, one last point on the clubs. I think you touched on it, Joe. If you draw their attention, whether it's enforcement, whether it's licensing, it could be L&I, and as a result, now enforcement's out because L&I was out. they're coming back. Oh, they're going to be back. They're going to finish this
you're
investigation.
You're on the radar now, man. You're on.
So, you know, if you're not maintaining, you know, your records and maintaining compliance and it results in a pretty bad citation, you're not off the hook. They're going to come back. They're going to do another complaint. And that's just going to result in either a non-renewal or maybe just a revocation on the citations themselves, you know.
So we have that minute time has flown. We didn't cover a lot of things. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say we didn't, but I want to make sure that you guys, you know, let listeners know a little bit, you know, obviously, you know, where they can reach is if they want to. Ed, if sure. Anybody wants to get in touch?
Sure. You know, I'm with the firm Goldstein McHugh. We're downtown Philadelphia. We're at 114 Chestnut Street.
At the website?
I have a website that has all my contact information. You want to email me through the website, you can accomplish that. But it's em@gmliquorlaw.com. So I'd be happy to, you know, I mean, Bill, this is Bill's show. I don't want to encroach on Bill's show, but,
Bill's
you know,
here to share.
I mean, feel, you know, I'd be happy to talk with anyone, especially if it's a club or something like that you have concerns about and you want to discuss some things, I'd be more than happy to.
Bill, about
you just moved your offices too, right?
Yeah, so we were at 325 Chestnut. We moved two blocks east. So
to where?
114. So we're between Front and Second on Chestnut Street on the south side.
So that's Old City.
Old City.
You mean just in case I was looking for you, moved? I knew it. Bill, law offices of Bill Marin?
Law offices of William B. Marin. It's at 1806 Callow Hill Street.
Website?
The website is marinlaw.com.
And what about Bar Doctors?
And Bar Doctors is bardoctors.net. And my email is wbmarin@aol.com. And yes, I am still on AOL.
Fantastic.
Nice. Nice.
But listen, it's been an awesome show. This hour has flown by. Obviously, we want to thank Ed McHugh for being our guest, man. It's been a long time coming. We left about 20 hours on the table. So there's got to be a series, you know.
Yeah,
here.
So while we're still on the air, Joe, I'd like to ask Ed McHugh if you would come back, because there's a number of things I wanted to talk to you about, some other changes, some other issues.
I'd be happy to come back. Right. It was a pleasure to be here. It's, you know, I feel like I'm amongst friends, and we're having a discussion in
family.
Our living room.
So he'll be back. We'll be back.
All right. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Bar Biz on WWDB Talk 860. I want to thank Bill Marin and his wife Liz Marin. Shout out to Liz. And of course, we're brought to you by Bar Doctors and our guest Ed McHugh of Goldstein and McHugh. Let's not forget Tyler in the booth. On behalf of everybody, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening.
Are you looking to sell your bar, restaurant, or other liquor-licensed establishment in Pennsylvania? Are you looking to buy one? Are you looking to buy or sell a liquor license? Bar Doctors can help. Bar Doctors is a bar brokerage and consulting firm with over 30 years of experience. Their Bar Doctors are highly trained in all aspects of the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board laws, rules, and regulations. They have liquor lawyers, accountants, insurance agents, vendors, consultants, and other hospitality specialists on staff to assist you in a smooth and successful transition. Whether you're looking to buy or sell, Bar Doctors has your cure. Contact them now at bardoctors.net or call them at 567-BAR-DOCS. That's bardoctors.net or 567-BAR-DOCS.